Here's a few quick notes about the show. Southern Girl Crime Stories is a podcast focused mostly on lesser-known true crime cases that range from murders, missing persons, cold cases, soft cases, and more. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, locations of murders, and more. In December 1998, in Broward County, Florida, a boater discovered a woman's body in a grassy area near a boat ramp off US 27. The female had been sexually assaulted and strangled to death. Unfortunately, no identification was found with her, and she would remain unidentified for the next 25 years. In 2023, her DNA was used with genetic genealogy research to track down three sisters. One of them had been missing since August 1998, 3 months before the female's body was found. That sister's name was 41-year-old Eileen Truppner, a mother of two who had left her native Puerto Rico and moved to South Florida to take English classes. Eileen was described by her sister as a kind person with a good heart that would never hurt anyone. Sadly, Eileen began to battle severe depression after the birth of her second child and eventually lost custody of both children. Now that they had the victim's name, they got to work tracking down her killer, once again turning to DNA. They were able to link the killer's DNA to Lucius Boyd, who is currently on death row for the murder of Donya DaCosta, a 21-year-old nursing student who was murdered approximately 2 weeks before Eileen. Donya was on her way home to Deerfield Beach after attending church when her car ran out of gas on Interstate 95. After walking to a gas station and filling up her container, she crossed paths with Boyd, who offered her a ride. After that, she was never seen alive again. When her body was found 2 days later, just like Eileen, she had been sexually assaulted and murdered. Boyd was the son of a funeral home director at James C. Boyd Funeral and was no stranger to the law. In 1993, he was charged with stabbing his ex-girlfriend's brother to death, but was acquitted after claiming self-defense. Then, in 1998, Boyd was charged with sexual battery for allegedly holding a knife to a prostitute's throat and forcing her to perform a sex act in his truck. He was found not guilty of the crime. On November 29, 2023, Boyd was indicted for the murder and sexual battery of Eileen. Boyd is believed to be a serial killer, and it's possible more murder victims will be linked to him in the future. On December 30, 1985, human remains were discovered in a car over an embankment in Auburn, Washington. When investigators searched the area, they found a second set of human remains. Both victims could not be identified and were referred to as Bones 16 and Bones 17. In 2002, the Green River Killer admitted to killing two victims in this exact location, but didn't know their identification. In April of 2012, a person watching a documentary on the Green River Killer, aka Gary Ridgway, noticed a woman who resembled their cousin. So they contacted the authorities, and with the use of DNA, they were able to confirm the identification of Bones 16 as 20-year-old Sandra Majors, who went missing on Christmas Eve of 1982. Years would go by without the identification of Bones 17 until finally, in 2023, with the assistance of Othram Labs, she was identified as 15-year-old Lori Ann Respotnick. Lori was born in Alaska and was living in Washington when she ran away from home. Lori's mother, Donna, said she speculated over the years that her daughter could have been one of Ridgway's victims. Currently, the Green River Killer has been found guilty of 49 murders and is serving his life sentence at the Walla Walla State Prison. He's believed to have killed up to 65 or 70 people, and two of his known victims remain unidentified. Monica Ann Anderson was born to parents Bill and V. Arroyo on June 13, 1983, in Sacramento, California. In 2010, 26-year-old Monica was described as a loving person with a caring heart. At the time, she lived with 20-year-old Lan On Lee, and worked at an O'Reilly Auto Parts store where she had recently been promoted to manager. Monica and Lan had met through mutual friends and had been living together for about 6 months. Lan was one of 10 children raised by Vietnamese refugees in Sacramento. Unfortunately, she had a rough childhood and became addicted to drugs during her teenage years. She then met Monica shortly after turning 18, and the two quickly became close friends. On the night of March 13, 2010, Monica and Lan spent the evening drinking alcohol and snorting drugs. Around 2:30 a.m., an argument over a cell phone charger broke out inside the girls' bedroom. Monica attempted to flee the apartment, but Lan chased her with a butcher knife and stabbed her to death. Monica was sadly found with as many as 91 stab wounds. Lan then tried to turn the knife on herself, but a friend was able to intervene until the police arrived. Lan was taken into custody and admitted to the murder during a police interrogation. She was then charged with first-degree murder. Come to find out, this wasn't the first fight between the girls. Allegedly, months before Monica's murder, she told her parents that Lan had blindly attacked her, leaving her with multiple bruises and a black eye. In the end, Lan was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. In 2021, 23-year-old Roxana Ruiz was a single mother to a young son living in Nezahualcoyotl, Mexico. This area of Mexico is known for its high rate of female murders. In May of 2021, Roxana was working, selling French fries, when she met a local boy named Sinai Cruz. Then, one day after working, Cruz joined Roxana and one of her friends for a drink. Afterward, he offered to walk her home, to which she agreed. After arriving at her home, he asked to stay the night because it was late and his home was quite a distance away. So Roxana agreed to let him sleep on a mattress on the floor. Unfortunately, this was the biggest mistake of her life. During the night, Cruz climbed onto her bed, hit her, tore off her clothes, and began sexually assaulting her while threatening to kill her. Roxana wasn't having it and decided to fight back. She hit him in the nose, causing him to bleed. After that, she grabbed a nearby t-shirt and strangled him to death. In a panic, she stuffed Cruz's body in a bag and dragged it out to the street. Unfortunately for her, police passed at the same time and caught her in the act. After being arrested, she explained that she was just defending herself, but the cops blamed her for the whole ordeal, saying she most likely instigated sex but then changed her mind. Roxana was then sentenced to 6 years in prison and ordered to pay more than $16,000 in restitution to Cruz's family. This caused a huge public outcry in Mexico from citizens who were fed up with the mistreatment of women in the country. Due to this, the prosecutors dropped the case against her and finally admitted that she did act in self-defense. Based on government data, nearly half of Mexican women have experienced sexual violence in their lifetime. The judge on the case, Monica Osorio, had the nerve to tell Roxana that she would have been better off hitting her attacker instead of choking him with a shirt. Sherry Wakasee Black was born in Provo, Utah on October 14, 1946. She grew up in Orem and attended Orem High School, where her love for books began. Sherry's parents owned a bowling alley, and she loved to bowl and even participated in multiple competitive leagues. It was in the leagues that she met and fell in love with Earl Black. Sherry and Earl would marry and have two children together, Jason and Heidi. Sadly, 18-year-old Jason died in 1989 from an accidental gunshot. In 2010, 64-year-old Sherry and Earl were living in Salt Lake City, Utah, where she ran a small bookstore named B&W Collector Books and Billiard Supply on her property. Sherry was described as quiet, unassuming, kind, and friendly. She knew books, and she was successful at what she did. After Jason passed, she became more interested in collecting rare books. On November 30, 2010, Earl came home from a meeting mid-morning and made a horrific discovery. He found Sherry sexually assaulted, beaten, and stabbed to death. The murder weapon was a pair of scissors found near her body. Investigators also found a bloody ladder, a broken antique orange knee-high bottle, and a men's Armani Exchange belt. None of those items belonged to the Black family. However, the most promising evidence was the blood, a partial fingerprint on a bookshelf, and a palm print by the exit doorknob. The forensic experts were able to retrieve DNA from three sources of evidence that pointed to an unknown male. Initially, her loved ones believed that her valuables, such as rare books, were the motive for murder. Besides the rare books, the shop also carried LDS-themed books, pool tables, custom knives, and other items. However, there were no signs of forced entry, and nothing was reported stolen, despite money being present in the cash register and rare books worth several thousand dollars scattered inside. The police found surveillance footage from cameras installed in front of the store that showed Earl leaving around 9:20 a.m. and returning at 1:18 p.m. His client also vouched for him, and the investigators ruled him out as a potential suspect. Earl then gave the detectives a possible lead when he mentioned a book dealer was scheduled to meet Sherry in the morning. The officers checked with him, and the dealer claimed he called Sherry around 10 a.m. to inform her he would be late for their appointment. The book dealer also stated he reached the bookstore around 10:30 a.m. and waited for around 40 to 45 minutes before leaving when he could not contact Sherry. While he was initially considered a person of interest, the police ruled him out after he voluntarily submitted his DNA and fingerprints, and they did not match the ones found at the crime scene. The blood from her killer was later submitted for forensic examination, and a DNA profile was developed. The DNA profile was uploaded into CODIS, but there were no matches. Within a few months, the police and Sherry's family reached out for help from the VDOC Society, a nonprofit organization that provides expert consultation on homicide investigations. The experts traveled to Salt Lake City and reviewed the case. They concluded that the murderer knew Sherry, and even if the encounter was extremely brief, the crime was planned and the motivation of the crime was of a sexual nature. They further felt the offender lived in or frequented the immediate area and was a younger male, no more than 19 years old, but if older, then likely mentally challenged. In 2017, Sorensen Labs in Utah created a limited genealogical profile of the perpetrator from DNA found at the crime scene. Later, one of the detectives attended a cold case conference in Washington, D.C. and learned about Parabon Nanolabs and their work with phenotyping DNA. The police department then hired Parabon to process the DNA from Sherry's crime scene, resulting in the creation of several age progression images of the perpetrator. In October 2018, the process of genetic genealogy began, and it would take 2 years to identify the person who murdered Sherry. In 2019, the lead detective began traveling to numerous states, meeting with members of the killer's family tree. This helped the genealogist narrow down and eliminate possible suspects. In the fall of 2020, the genealogist noticed that someone had uploaded a DNA profile into GEDmatch that looked much closer to the murderer than they had seen before. So the detective headed to Sacramento, California, and met with a woman who would end up being the missing link in the investigation. Thankfully, she willingly allowed the detectives to take a DNA swab from her. Also in the home that day was her adult son. The investigator asked him if he might have a child from his past that he was aware of. He said that many years ago, a woman had indicated that he might be the father of her child, but didn't pursue things further. Just like his mother, he also agreed to a DNA swab. When the DNA results came back, it confirmed that the man from Sacramento was the biological father of the person who took Sherry's life. That man was Adam DeBarro of Orem, Utah, who would have been 19 years old at the time of the murder. After watching him and collecting his DNA, they were able to confirm their suspicions. In October of 2020, DeBarro was arrested and charged with Sherry's murder. He then told investigators that he had no intention of murdering anybody when he entered the bookstore that day. He claimed he was angry after being put into the state foster system again and was on his way to his psychiatrist's office when he came across Sherry's store. With some time to kill, Adam entered the shop and was greeted by a smiling Sherry. He claimed her kindness angered him, and he killed her with whatever items he could find. After the murder, he said he ran to his psychiatrist's office before anybody could catch him. In the end, he pleaded guilty to aggravated murder to avoid a trial and was sentenced to life without parole in February 2022. Thanks for joining me today on Southern Girl Crime Stories. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, location of murders, and more. As always, your support is very much appreciated, and I look forward to seeing y'all next time.